So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time. Waiting for tonight. Oh. So, take a look.
The World Wrestling Federation proudly presents WrestleMania! The champion, Ric Flair, defends the title against the number one contender, the Macho Man, Randy Savage. The maniacal Sid Justice goes one-on-one with the immortal Hulk Hogan in what could prove to be Hulk Hogan's farewell match. It's a double main event. It's WrestleMania.
Welcome to Review Away, everyone. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting joining you here just moments after the Law and WrestleMania 26. And what did you think of WrestleMania tonight, Wei?
I thought it was fantastic. I mean, completely unforgettable show, considering...
The finish of the show surprised me.
Oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. I really could not believe it. I'm speechless. I don't know what to say.
And a real interesting choice for Money in the Bank ladder match. I mean, the 10 guys, of all the 10, I mean, yeah. I think that was definitely a little surprising.
Did you see what happened there?
It wasn't what I was expecting. And I think if you go back to my preview on the website earlier in the week, definitely surprising.
It was amazing. I mean, we're sitting here right now, Monday morning now. I guess it would be, what, like 4, 3 a.m.? I don't know. Yeah. I'm still reeling from what I just saw this evening.
Triple H and Sheamus, I know people will be on the fence about that. I think that was the right finish. And the pyro display at the beginning was just awesome.
Oh, my God. Wow, the pyro. Yeah. So the lighting, too, was... The video was great. Yeah.
Yeah. Great show.
Did you hear... What is it? The girl sing America the Beautiful at the beginning?
Oh, yeah. Fantasia from American Idol.
Fantastic.
I wasn't a big fan of the Walt Disney movie, but the singer impressed me.
That's great.
Well, let's get into our show here, Wei. And first of all, right off the top, I do want to thank everybody. This past week, we released our documentary, Survival of the Hitman, that you and I worked on, along with Steve Duncan and George Barbosa at the Fight Network. Speaking for myself, I was blown away by the positive responses to it. I was not expecting it to get the level of feedback that we got.
Absolutely. I mean, we worked on this, and then the most I thought was just that it would get a few hits online, but never would I imagine that it would reach out to people like Howard Finkel and Jim Ross, who not only watched it, but gave us great praise on their Twitter and on their website. Just the visual of Jim Ross sitting in front of his computer watching our documentary is quite amazing.
Yeah, it was very cool. And, I mean, thanks as well. Like something like this, obviously the Fight Network is a very small television station in Canada. We have just over 1 million subscribers. And this thing, it really... was promoted through word of mouth, through shows like this, and it was just really spreading by a lot of media outlets covering it, like Between the Ropes, Brian Fritz, who works for that show, and Fan House.
PW Torch.
You know, the Wrestling Observer website, yeah. PW Insider with Mike Johnson. I mean, it was the wrestling media, I think, really, really helped us out a lot. Lance Storm was chatting about it with Brian Alvarez on their radio show this past week. So thanks to everybody for talking about it because, I mean, we don't have the promotional efforts of, you know, WWE or even a TNA, maybe above TNA. But nonetheless, thanks to everybody for watching it, and we encourage any feedback. I've tried to get back to as many people as possible that have contacted us. The major question is a DVD release, which we should hopefully have some information in the next little while, so just keep tuning here. We honestly just don't have an answer right now. So as soon as we do, you guys will be the first to know. So thank you to everybody. Was there anything you want to add, Wei?
No, not really. Just thanks everybody for all the feedback that you've given us, whether positive or negative. It's just been really nice to see what other people think of the work.
I'm going to share one story because it's been out there a while about Bruce Hart, and I was going to share the story of how we did I talk about Bruce? I think I did a few interviews this week, and I couldn't remember if we talked about this last week or if it was during the week I said it to somebody.
You
anyway.
You never said it to me.
All right. Well, we'll edit around this. For Bruce Hart, when you and I went out to Calgary back in February, I was trying to get a hold of Bruce to do an interview with, and the guy doesn't have voicemail. He doesn't have a cell phone. Doesn't have Facebook. Doesn't even have a cell phone. He just is a very hard guy to get a hold of, and I'd called him a number of times, never got an answer. There's no answering machine. It would ring 30 times, and he wouldn't answer. Yeah. So we went out to Calgary just with the assumption, okay, we're going to get Ross and Keith Hart, and Bruce just isn't going to happen. He never got back to us. And then I think our first night there, I get a call from Bruce Hart, and it was 30 minutes I spoke to him, and by speak to him, I mean listen to him for probably 28 minutes of the 30-minute phone call.
I went out and shot some scenics of Calgary, and when I came back, you were on the phone with somebody, and you stayed on the phone with that person for a good 15 minutes, and you were so engaged in conversation. By engaged, I mean you were just sitting there listening to this person talk. I thought it was maybe our boss talking to you about something that had gone wrong or something about, I don't know, something major.
Brett canceling on us.
Yeah, you were just sitting there speechless listening to this guy going, yes, yes,
So we ended up, Bruce wanted to be a part of the piece, and then we arranged to meet up with him the next day. We'd been shooting all day long on this day. This was late in the evening that I spoke to him. So the next day, we met up with Bruce, and we didn't really have a lot of locations. He at first wanted to do it at a bar, and I was like, no, we're not doing it at a bar. It's going to be ridiculously loud, and the context of that is really not appropriate.
Yeah.
So we ended up, our only option was going back to the hotel room that me and Wei were staying at, and Wei, to his credit, tried to dress up that wall as best you could to make add a little depth with the light, doing the old WWE trick.
Right, that's it.
That's where we interviewed Bruce Hart. And, you know, a lot of people will say a lot about Bruce, but I found him to be a very interesting character. I think he's somewhat misunderstood by a lot of people. He's got a book coming out, which I'm sure will be a trigger of a lot of controversy. It's coming out through ECW Press. Mm-hmm. And, you know, go watch the documentary. A lot of people have differing opinions of Bruce Hart, but I thought it was cool that we got to talk to him, and I thought it offered a different point of view.
Absolutely.
Inside the Hart family, which, you know, as guys that are putting together a documentary of sort, you want different angles. Mm-hmm. Whether people agree or disagree with them, I think it's always good to have different perspectives of people that were there firsthand and connected to the subject.
And it's really too bad we didn't really spend much of what Bruce said on the documentary, because
A lot of it was on the Stampede stuff, because he was booking for it, and we are planning to do something with Stampede in the future, and I think you'll hear a lot more in terms of, because obviously we're sitting on a ton of stuff that we got out there. Yeah. Like, we shot hours and hours of interviews out there, so there's lots of different options we have.
Yeah, just getting the chance to talk to Bruce one-on-one earlier in the day. The guy still has such a great mind for the business. He was giving John and I ideas about how he would book this Bret Hart angle, and I was just sitting there, and really blew me away. He has a great, great mind for characters and booking.
We'll get into the review now. Last week we had discussed we were going to review ECW Hardcore Heaven 2000. This event may as well not even exist, because there was no way we could find it, and we sent people online to find this thing, and it got to the point where one guy who was helping us out a lot, Ben Brisebois, had uploaded part of it to Mega Upload Video, and then the second part, he was going to have to send a different way, zip the files, and it would have to go. He was explaining the whole process, and I was like, this is going to take a lot of time on your end, and it's going to take a lot of time on our end to download this thing, and I think it's just best that we change course, and thus WrestleMania 8 is our review this week.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks everyone for trying to help out.
Richard Fournier as well out there, right. Thank you very much for your efforts. They did not go unnoticed.
Yeah, it appears we have stumped the Facebook group, which I didn't think was possible, but you know what? I'm actually happier that we're doing a WrestleMania review coming off of the WrestleMania buzz.
It does make sense.
Yeah.
We are going to, we'll announce at the end, we will do an ECW review next week, because I know a lot of people want to hear us branch out from WWE and WCW, so we will definitely get to that at the end of the show. But here we go, Wei. WrestleMania 8, this was the first event I ever experienced as a wrestling fan. I just started watching a month or two prior to this when I was 8 years old.
Wow.
So this one took place April the 5th, 1992 at Indianapolis, Indiana at the Hoosier Dome, and it featured... we heard it right off the top, Vince McMahon's intro for this event, and I would be happy if Vince McMahon did the opening video every year. This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I get so excited for an event when he is off the top, just like killing his vocal cords.
Yeah. I don't know if excitement is the right word. I tend to laugh more than get excited.
Well, I think it's excellent, and I would be so happy if he did this every year. And that was his only involvement in WrestleMania.
Pretty much on air. He just went crazy. He went crazy with that voice.
We have Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan on commentary, which was rather entertaining throughout this three-hour event. And we mentioned off the top it was Fantasia at last evening's WrestleMania 26 event, but in WrestleMania 8-Way, it was Reba McEntire, who they announced the winner of two People's Choice Awards, singing the national anthem. And I've always heard stories that Reba was there and left and had zero interest in being at this event.
Hey, whatever.
Not a memorable rendition of America the Beautiful.
Wrestling fans don't have too much interest in Reba McEntire either.
Something to note throughout this show, Way, was I actually kept count of the number of times Gorilla Monsoon dropped a, "Will you be serious? Will you stop?" The grand count for me was nine. Nine times he busted this out.
I wonder who Elizabeth's going home with tonight.
Will you stop?
She's already been on that show.
Will you stop?
But then again, if the Indians had more pitching, they'd be a better team.
Why don't you stop?
Our opening match, Way, Tito Santana against Shawn Michaels. Nothing on the line. This was Shawn Michaels' first singles match at a WrestleMania event.
Could you believe after what we saw tonight, now we're seeing Shawn Michaels in his first WrestleMania match.
Very, very interesting parallel there. Gorilla Monsoon introduces Tito Santana, stating, "What an athlete and what a gentleman." Great baby face, that Tito Santana. Shawn Michaels came out to the same theme music he has now, only it was when Sensational Sherry sang it. I love this theme music. I thought it was great. When I was a kid, I was always a fan of this theme music with Sherry singing it. And now Shawn sings this song. It's so ridiculous.
By now, you mean for the past 20 years.
Yes, now. For the past 20 years, he's been doing it. But you know what I mean? Like,
oh, well, it still works.
He's a grown man singing, "I'm just a sexy boy."
But it fits his character.
I guess it does, but he's 42 now.
Yeah, it's a bit odd.
It's just fans are just creatures of habit with that theme music.
I think I was always, I was brought up in a very, I don't know, prude environment, and
your parents didn't approve of this?
Well, I don't know if my parents ever heard it, but I just maybe it would have been uncomfortable when this song came up, and then they were in the room with me. All they heard was sex.
Did they maybe cringe when they saw the back of Shawn Michaels' leather jacket that said, "I'm too sexy for this crowd"?
Maybe.
That song, I guess, was a big hit at this time.
Yeah, actually, on the WWE's website, they have, facts of 1992.
Oh, this is an awesome part of these WrestleMania reviews.
Well, here they are. Ross Perot entered the presidential race, but in the end, George Bush was defeated by Bill Clinton.
Correct.
Woody Allen was dating his adopted daughter, Soon Yi. Wright said Fred came out with the comical yet popular song, "I'm Too Sexy." Parents everywhere cringed at the Mortal Kombat video game. And Sir Mix-a-Lot let the world know what he looks for in a woman with Baby Got That.
That's awesome.
That's it. Yeah. 1992.
Wow, what a year. I got to say, for Shawn Michaels, whose character was all about being a sexy boy and appealing to women, here he is coming out with, he's wearing leather chains and he has a mullet.
Yeah.
I would think he would be appealing to both sexes, probably. In an equal amount, maybe more so on the male side.
Sure. Well, you know that he posed for Playgirl, and more guys read Playgirl than girls.
I've heard that. During this match, Way, Gorilla Monsoon, with a very offensive line here towards Sensational Sherry. "Who did that makeup? Helen Keller?"
Yeah, very offensive for
Gorilla. Gorilla. During the match, Gorilla Monsoon teased that they're going to be promoting their 1-900 hotline, and we'll give information about that number later. Never came back to it. Never gave that number out. Very, very long side headlock spot in this match by Tito Santana. And Monsoon enforces the fact that he's never seen someone win with a side headlock. Great, great for the babyface there, that he's wasting his time. There was a kick to Tito's face in which Heenan noted, "No tacos tonight for Tito Santana." Suplex over the top rope. Sherry grabs Tito's legs, and Sean gets the pin here while Sherry's holding down the legs of Tito. Went to a sign in the crowd that said, "Bring back Warrior." And Heenan ended by calling Michaels, "He's going to be the star of the 90s. Very prophetic, right? Yeah. By Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Very lackluster match. Nothing too sensational.
This was not the start of Mr. WrestleMania.
No, it wasn't. Not like what you saw tonight. Oh, my God. What a match.
Yeah, completely contrasting. Gene Okerlund is on the floor, and he welcomes out the Legion of Doom, who introduced Paul Ellering, whose delivery was almost like when King Curtis Iaukea was part of the Dungeon of Doom. The Sullivan! That's what he sounded like in this.
Okay.
The whole point of this was that they have a new manager, and now they're... Ellering called them the Proculator of Destruction, and I guess they're getting a push out of this. I didn't really understand the point of this on WrestleMania.
This was actually very long. They both, all three members talked at
this
length.
Went longer than some of the matches later.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool seeing them. It was cool seeing all them. Something you notice about the promos back then, everybody talked like they were high on coke.
They were.
Yeah.
Everyone. During this thing, Animal noted, "What are you going to do when 75,000 people are chanting LOD? I'm like, that's a big discrepancy. That's 50,000 people. 75,000. We should note, everyone, I know this was during a downtime in the WWF, and everyone's like, oh, this place was packed. Yeah. A lot of papering for this event in 1992 at the Hoosier Dome.
Gotcha.
We go to Sean Mooney backstage with Jake Snake Roberts, and... Mooney addresses Jake and asks him about the rumors that you will bring a snake to the ring. And then they showed the angle with Jake and The Undertaker, where Jake closed the casket on The Undertaker's fingers and then beat him down with a chair. And that's what I set up this match. Jake, always a great promo.
Yeah, absolutely. Undertaker used to play a zombie. That's all basically he was. He didn't really show much emotion. He was just like a walking
dead man. Guy. Yeah.
Straight from a zombie movie.
Yeah, but even zombies have to... They have delicate hands if they get caught in a casket. We go to our third match. Jake the Snake Roberts against The Undertaker.
The other man in tonight's classic bout.
Yes, from one to the other here. This was... Oh, geez, this is the second match in.
Yeah.
The Undertaker. Not a whole lot to say about this match. Roberts hits a DDT, and then Taker does his sit-up motion. And this was basically writing off Jake Roberts, who was done after this show. So they basically killed off the DDT. Roberts went outside to attack Paul Bearer. Taker saved him, hit a tombstone on the floor to Jake, rolled him back into the ring, pinned him, and The Undertaker improves his streak to 2-0.
Fans were nuts for these two.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Undertaker, very, very strong character at this point in time. And Jake was on his way to Mexico to work for AAA. We go now to Gene Okerlund, who's backstage with Roddy Piper and Bret Hart. I really enjoyed this promo.
You know, I gotta say, first of all, man, I gotta tell you how much I love your family. I gotta tell you how much I love your mom. I know this guy since he's been knee high to a grasshopper. I remember when they were changing your potty pants. I remember even when, of course, you weren't potty trained till he was 7, but everybody's got their problem. We're tying bows in our shoes when we were kids. Of course, your shoes were always tied together. Doesn't matter to me, because I remember when Mrs. Hart used to come down, man. She used to make them sandwiches, man. Throw on that bologna. Of course, only one piece of bologna, but that don't matter. I was hungry.
Yes, I did too. Piper puts over Hart's family, saying he remembers Hart from way back when he was a little kid and his mom was making bologna sandwiches, but there was only one slice of bologna.
Implying great. That they're poor.
Yeah, great promo from Piper.
This was very, very well done. And it leads into our third match. Roddy Piper defending the Intercontinental Championship against Bret Hart. And at the opening of this match, did you notice the fans behind the hard camera, in front of the hard camera, with a giant sheet that read The Four Horsemen?
No, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't see that.
They were able to sneak that onto TV.
Uh-oh.
Early on, Brett's selling the right shoulder, and then he played possum here for a small package spot that Piper kicked out of. If you notice, early on, Brett does a blade job from a right-handed punch from Piper.
And a bulldog.
This was at a time, yes, and a bulldog, when no blood was allowed on television, pay-per-view at all. Like, they had a,
really?
It was similar to right now. There was a strict policy against no blood. And Brett always insisted that it was hard way, and then later revealed that it was, in fact, the blade job.
Of course. It's just so obvious. You could see him. But we saw blood two times on this pay-per-view.
Yeah, I know. We'll talk about that one, the other one later.
Okay.
Because one guy got in shit and the other guy didn't. Gorilla Monsoon referred to a Russian leg sweep as a neck breaker during this match. Piper blocks the sharpshooter and then tosses Hart into the referee. So we have a rough bump and Piper goes outside, grabs the ring bell, and then he teases hitting Brett with it. But then his conscience takes over and he opts not to. Throws the bell away. Piper applies a sleeper, and then Brett did a unique finish here where he kicked off the turnbuckles, flipped over on top, and pinned Piper as the referee regained his consciousness. And Bret Hart defeats Roddy Piper, and this was Piper's first clean job in the WWF.
Wow. Really?
He had never done a job. That's why him and Hogan never did a big program together, was Piper never wanted to put him over.
That's amazing.
So he put over Bret here.
Yeah. Yeah,
and a little thing, and they did this in the Randy Savage match too that I enjoyed, was that after the finish, they delayed playing the music, and I thought it just added to something. Like, you really just seen something, and that
it's as if the music guy was so.
It's
shocked.
Almost like they played it as a shoot, like you didn't know who was gonna win, and they had to load up their cart track.
Yeah,
because this was 1992.
Yeah.
Pre-digital world way.
Yeah, I really like this match. I especially like the finish. It's a spot that I remembered for a while. And crowd was so hot for this.
Mm-hmm. Bobby Heenan then is in the broadcast booth with Gorilla Monsoon. And joining us live via satellite is Lex Luger, live from Atlanta, announcing that he's joining the World Bodybuilding Federation. And he refers to Monsoon as that fat guy. Even in a tape promo like this, because believe me, I do not believe he was live via satellite. Still fucked up a word in here, coining the new phrase plethora instead of plethora. Plethora. Then a random woman inside of his house shows up with a protein shake, and she's wearing a World Bodybuilding Federation shirt, and then she just walks off. I guess it's his maid. Or his assistant. Yeah. He downs the drink, and Lex Luger is coming to the World Bodybuilding Federation. That would, if anyone, they did like one pay-per-view in like June of 92. Could we review a bodybuilding event, Way?
Oh, God.
I don't even know what you'd review.
Yeah, I really don't know either. But to see Lex Luger in one would be quite entertaining. He even goes nuts here. He just begs to see Luger's body.
It was weird. Backstage, we go to a promo with the Mountie, the Nasty Boys, and Repo Man. All it was each person going through and inserting a pun about their gimmick for what they're going to do in this match. Very, very clever. Then we go to their opponents for tonight's 8-man tag, Sergeant Slaughter, Jim Duggan, Virgil, and the Big Boss Man. Virgil's wearing a mask with a broken nose. And Duggan insists that this won't be a good wrestling match. They're just coming to fight. So that takes us to the 8-man tag, Way, as we just mentioned. Slaughter, Duggan, Virgil, and the Big Boss Man against the Mountie, Repo Man, and the Nasty Boys.
Yeah, none of these guys, by the way, would stay on for the rest of the year and be at the next WrestleMania.
Well, no. At this time, they were going through a massive steroid scandal. The steroid trial against Vince McMahon would be... The early seeds of it were being planted in 1991, and then by this point, they were really starting to clean up and stuff, and guys are just mysteriously disappearing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Before this 8-man tag, we were witness to Ray Combs in his stand-up comedy act as he just told a bunch of lame jokes.
We have a man, the survey said, the Mountie, a man who doesn't know the meaning of the word fear. But then again, they said there's a lot of words he does not know the meaning of. It's only in the survey. It's the survey. It's the survey, and they also said that as a law enforcement officer, he does the work of three men, Curly, Larry, and Moe, the survey said.
Thankfully, it was cut short.
And he died.
He actually, he committed suicide years later, the host of Family Feud. And Family Feud, who's the host of Family Feud now? Is Richard Karn still doing it?
It's either Richard Karn or the dude from Seinfeld.
That guy. Yeah, I think he's still doing it. If it's even still on the air, I don't know. This whole match seemed designed to promote the WWF versus WBF themed week on Family Feud in May that they kept mentioning. I noted in this match that Virgil, sporting the mask with his broken nose, is the same gimmick they do a year later with Brutus Beefcake that we reviewed. Finishes Sags attempting to hit Virgil. Virgil ducks, Sags hit Knobs, and Virgil pins Knobs. Very uneventful finish. This seemed like a match just to get guys on the card. Nothing very impressive in this match at all. In fact, I'd say this was pretty bad.
No, but the crowd was very much into it. I mean, perhaps after a very competitive... I think these matches have their place on a show like this.
Kind it's of a calm-down match?
Kind of.
For something bigger?
It was sort of like that hardcore match we had seen on WrestleMania 13 with the LOD and
all. Oh, right.
Or NO... What is it?
Nation of Domination.
Yeah, all that stuff. I didn't mind it.
We go backstage. There were a lot of backstage. Like, every match was followed by, like, a backstage interview in this. Mm-hmm. Everything. There's nothing creative, nothing different. It was just Sean Mooney or Gene Okerlund backstage with someone. This one was Sean Mooney with Mr. Perfect and Ric Flair. They were teasing that they were going to reveal a centerfold tonight on the big screen of Elizabeth to be shown to the audience. This showed, I think, some desperation on the WWE's part, where they were promising these revealing photos of Elizabeth on pay-per-view, which, after this promo, were, like, never addressed, ever.
No. These days, you could just go on the internet and see all that stuff. I don't think this program would work very well.
Flair cut a great, great promo, probably better than 95% of the stuff he cut in the WWE after 2001.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, he was just allowed to go crazy here, and he was allowed to woo.
He wants to gangbang Liz with Mr. Perfect.
Yeah, he says he's going to ride Space Mountain, and then Mr. Perfect at the end notes, "Can I come along too?" That was a little odd. Gene Okerlund is outside the locker room of Randy Savage, and Okerlund says he's not granting interviews to anybody, and Okerlund suggests that maybe he is getting ready for his WWF title match, which is next. No shit, Mean Gene. The match is next. He's not giving out any interviews.
Why was Flair talking? To Sean Mooney.
Well, Flair's, I guess, more accommodating. Maybe Randy Savage had the belief of Okerlund was like some, I don't know, like the WWE's policy with certain radio shows that they only will grant interviews to certain media outlets, and Gene Okerlund wasn't at a certain level.
Perhaps.
That takes us to the WWF title match right in the middle of the card. Ric Flair defending against Randy Savage. Great sign in the audience that they cut to during Flair's entrance. Flair is a square.
Huh.
Ooh. A lot of brawling to start this match. Very long sell by Savage to start this match. Flair was working over the lower back and the kidney of Savage. I've got to say, Savage's offense, not very pleasing.
It's
very rough, very uncoordinated.
Yeah.
He just seemed like very, I don't know, not coordinated would be the best description.
I don't know.
I guess this was like a brawl.
I didn't.
And you don't want it to look smooth, but at the same time, it seemed all over the place.
Okay. Well, what were you expecting from Randy Savage?
I don't know. It just seemed awkward at times. Just, I guess they're trying to get over the fact that this was a grudge match. It was a fight. And you're
That's how he always wrestles.
I guess. Where am I here? There was a top rope double axe handle to Flair on the floor, and then Flair went headfirst into the guardrail, and this is where Flair bladed. And the story afterwards was that Vince McMahon just went crazy on Ric Flair, and actually years later, Flair referenced this on a promo in the WWF where he just thought he could go out and blade. It was WrestleMania. Why not? And he bladed. Brett bladed, but Brett just said, hey, it was hard way, and Flair was not aware of how to cover up a blade job, so Flair got in some shit over this. Crowd was very, very hot for the near falls by Randy Savage. We saw the elbow drop by Savage, but Perfect broke up the count, and then threw in the nucks to Ric Flair, who knocked out Savage. And then they proceeded to work on the leg of Savage with a chair, And this led to Elizabeth running out from backstage, and she was stopped by Dave Hebner, who was wearing a suit with white sneakers, and Shane McMahon and Billy Red Lions, you can also catch there in the melee as well. There's a figure four on Savage, which is reversed. Savage is selling the left knee at this point from the chair shots. Savage ducks a punch from Flair, rolls up Flair with the trunks, and gets the win. No music again after for the title changes, something I really liked. Flair is livid, he's all bloody, and then he kisses Elizabeth, who slaps and attacks Savage, and slaps and attacks Flair, and then Savage runs and jumps on top of Flair and beats him down. And then Flair and Perfect get the advantage and continue to attack the knee of Savage. So you definitely got the impression this feud was continuing.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was an excellent match. The near falls were fantastic, and Hennig plays an excellent second in command.
The executive consultant. He was very, very well utilized in this match. And I thought the post-match was excellent because it really made you want to see a rematch. Like, yeah. Savage wins, but he cheated to win. And
this post-match promo,
they made
Flair,
that title change seem so significant. Perfect was pissed. Heenan was pissed. Yeah. Flair was pissed. It was. I just thought it was so well done.
It was, because they were pointing out the fact that this time it was somebody else that had cheated. And Perfect and Heenan start complaining about the finish. Then when Mooney brings the mic to Rick, Flair is only silent for a second. Then with blood all over his face, cuts one of the most threatening, sinister promos I've ever seen.
What we have right now is a man that'll walk around town tonight claiming to be the real world champion. Claiming to be the second time WWE heavyweight champion. He'll be claiming it all. And most of all, you'll be claiming the love of that Jezebel, Elizabeth. Now, Savage, unlike a lot of people in the greatest sport of them all, we don't cry over spilt milk. We reassemble a team. The money, the brains, the nucleus, and we say to our opponent, you did it once. Now, let's see you do it again. One time means nothing to my career. Tell him, Mr. Perfect.
He starts off calm, and it just builds and builds. And it was very, very effective with to contrast against Perfect and Heenan here. This was all backstage with Sean Mooney. Very, very well done. They then go to Gene Okerlund, who's with Savage and Elizabeth. This, on the other hand, was just, it made no sense. Randy Savage was just incoherent. I didn't know what he was trying to say. He gave the title to Elizabeth and was like, that's yours. This is yours, Flair. And he tore his outfit and just nuts. Then we go to a highlight way of the WrestleMania 8 press conference that we posted earlier this week on the Facebook group. Of Jack Tunney announcing that Hulk Hogan would get the shot at Ric Flair, and that was later changed. And Sid was all upset. And then we saw the Saturday night's main event angle with Hogan and Sid against The Undertaker and Ric Flair, where Sid abandoned Hulk Hogan. And then I always have loved this segment, the barbershop with Sid and Brutus Beefcake, where Sid just starts destroying the barbershop, and he hits some like shaving cream or something, and it splashes all over his face. And then he cuts this promo where he comes across like such a maniac. This was awesome. The barbershop had some awesome angles. Uh-huh. And by a lot, I mean the two with Marty and Sean and this. Yeah. I've always remembered this angle and thought it was so good because of all that shit on his face. He looked psychotic.
That had to not have been intentional.
You couldn't have planned that.
No
one would assume that, well, just knock over the set and all this shit flies into his face like this guy's out of his mind. It was so good. I just thought it was great.
Then we cut to an even more awesome Sid music.
Oh, this was like, it was an 80s montage video of Sid clips with this just weird song underneath.
If he thought that the what is it the Tom Petty Bret Hart thing was cheesy. This was even a whole nother level.
This was like 80s rock.
Yeah.
About nightmares. It just was so random.
If anyone knows the name of this song, please let us know.
Yeah, please. It's this was just strange. I do not recall this at all, ever. And then we go to a bunch of natives dancing in the ring, which I didn't understand.
Indians, John.
Indians, as they're referred to here. Natives would be the politically correct term way.
No, we don't want that.
And they're part of Tatanka's Lumbee Nation tribe in North Carolina. Then backstage, Sean Mooney's with Rick Martel. Martel says that Indians have no class. And then in
style.
Yeah, and then he adds this completely offensive statement to end the promo.
I heard that Tatanka is still out there scalping tickets.
Hey, I thought it was funny. I laughed.
You're setting everything back years away.
Scalping tickets.
Rick Martel against Tatanka. This seemed like filler. Heenan returns to the broadcast booth. He makes a quick statement about Ric Flair. He's regained his composure and then gets all irate. This was great. Crowd was dead for this match, coming off that high with the Flair and Randy Savage angle, which was fine. I didn't care. High cross body block by Tatanka for the win. As I said, a very much of a filler match. Nothing much to report on.
These
match.
For me personally, at least, I never took these heavily gimmicked characters as seriously as some of the other ones, such as Savage or Piper or Flair, guys with no job. Here you had
Rick Martel was a model.
Model versus Native American. How do you take that seriously?
I always liked Rick Martel. And arrogance. I thought it was a fun gimmick. We go backstage. Holy shit. So many backstage interviews. Sean Mooney's with Money Incorporated. Gene Okerlund is then with the Natural Disasters. The Natural Disasters. Wow. These two and their cosmetic look. Unbelievable. At the end, they just start, like, they do the stereotypical wrestling promo where they just yell and then they hit each other and they're ready for their tag title match. Money Incorporated defending the tag titles against the Natural Disasters. And at this point, Monsoon calls this one of the greatest WrestleManias ever. I disagree. Jimmy Hart is wearing this great WrestleMania 8 jacket. Typhoon goes for a splash at DiBiase, who is in the ropes. And then Typhoon misses DiBiase. DiBiase moves out of the way, and Typhoon had to get himself over the top rope. This looked horrible. Like, just terrible. Typhoon, it just seemed took an eternity to go over the top rope, and even longer that he spent in this match. It was like 4 minutes solid of Typhoon, which was just too much. We saw Earthquake tag in the most offensive move of his career, jumped up in the air to give a forward kick to IRS in the corner. This was the most athletic maneuver I've ever seen out of John Tenta. Earthquake attempts the avalanche onto IRS, but Jimmy Hart pulls him out before he can deliver it. They run out and get counted out, and Gorilla notes that they give up the purse money. Bullshit finish at WrestleMania.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, but it's set up next year's Money Incorporated.
Yeah, I'm sure they had that all mapped out.
Yeah.
That this was to build to next year's finish with the Mega Maniacs.
It was very lame.
Gene Okerlund is backstage with Brutus the Barber Beefcake, who had maybe the worst haircut I've ever seen on a wrestler.
Yeah, ironic.
A little bit. He says that Hogan always had his dignity, and he's always given in this business. And they tease that tonight could be Hogan's retirement match. From there, we go to Skinner against Owen Hart. Owen does a moonsault off the top rope.
Go ahead.
He does a moonsault off the top during his entrance and then walks into Skinner spitting out tobacco juice into his face. That was gross. He got all this shit on his face. He delivers a shoulder breaker, delivers a reverse neck breaker. Then he throws Owen over the top rope, who does a skin the cat move, and then an O'Connor roll by Owen Hart for the win. This was like a minute.
Why did they have this match?
I have no idea. One of the other matches that was scheduled for this was the Berserker against the British Bulldog.
Yeah.
The British Bulldog was going to headline SummerSlam later that year at Wembley Stadium. Would he not be more important to have on this card than Owen Hart and Skinner?
Yeah, I really don't
know. Maybe it was time. They were allowed to have these guys go in for a minute. But you could have had Bulldog just squash Berserker. That would have made more sense to me.
Maybe they wanted to save that match.
For what?
For
Superstars?
For something else.
Their next pay-per-view was August.
Maybe for Superstars.
It just didn't make sense to me.
I like Owen Hart's terrible checkered pair of pants.
These are awesome.
And suspenders.
Well, he was the Rocket. He was flying.
Yeah.
And he had Rocket gear. Was that his job? What was his job here? He was just the Rocket. Owen Hart. Did he just fly? Travels in his Rocket from show to show?
No, he had no job. Maybe he's a dancer.
Maybe. Looks maybe
like,
he was
like
a...
an MC Hammer type of parachute.
Those
pants.
Were the MC Hammer pants he had. Yeah. We go backstage. Gene Okerlund is with Sid Justice and Harvey Whippleman. Sid refers to Okerlund as a fat, bald-headed little oaf. I love Sid and his promos on this show. They were great.
Yeah.
We just yell, shut up! Shut up! There was no reason to have Harvey Whippleman. Sid carried these promos.
Yeah.
He promises that tonight will be Hogan's last match. Then they go to an interview segment from TV earlier in the month with Vince McMahon interviewing Hulk Hogan. And they had a collage of baby pictures of Hulk Hogan, like something right out of like your grade 8 visual art class. And Vince ends it with, well, whether this is your last match on Sunday, thank you for the memories. Thank you for the inspiration. Thank you for Hulkamania. This was 18 years ago.
It's so creepy.
Hulk Hogan is still wrestling.
Do you realize that In how many matches are on this card?
Nine, I think.
Nine matches. Seven out of the nine matches still feature people that are active wrestlers.
That's today. Horrible. That says nothing about like the evolution of the industry.
Michaels, Taker, Brett was on tonight. The Nasty Boys, Flair.
Money, Inc. and Natural Disasters is the one match where no guy is still competing. Well, Skinner is still training guys but doesn't work.
Even Tatanka still...
Sid still wrestles indies, the occasional right? indie date. Hogan just wrestled a couple of weeks ago.
Damn, man.
My God, man. And these guys were like, they were getting up there. Like, yeah. Hogan was teasing his retirement here in 1992.
Yeah.
Not that he was serious about retirement. They just wanted him off TV following all the steroid stuff. But here we go with our main event, Sid Justice and Hulk Hogan. I would have been happy if they just got into the ring and had a debate rather than wrestle, because that was the worst part of both guys. Hogan comes in, and his music is playing during the whole opening sequence where he just beats the shit out of Sid, kills his heat right away, and then does his posing routine where he tears off his shirt as Sid's on the outside. This was a horrible match. We saw a test of strength that lasted like a minute 45.
Holy shit. It lasted a long time, this test of strength.
Oh, I was like, well, at least the rest hold's over. Wrong. Then we got a rest hold where Sid just put his hand on
the same nerve,
the trapezius muscle, Yokozuna's specialty.
Yeah,
this was like 2 minutes of this 9 minute match, and then another minute 45 of the test of strength, like every shortcut possible.
But I will say though, the crowd did not give a shit. The crowd were on their
they were
feet
into this
for these nerve pinches.
Sid eventually hit the power bomb, and this led to Hogan hulking up. He hit the leg drop, and then Harvey Whippleman missed his spot where he was supposed to break this up, and he missed it, so Sid had to kick out of the leg drop of doom. So then he attacks Whippleman. Papa Shango runs down to the ring. By this point, the bell is rung, so you get a DQ finish in your main event at WrestleMania. Can you imagine that? That could never fly today.
Yeah, it was
never.
Outrageous.
Papa Shango runs out. Him and Sid are attacking Hulk Hogan, who's trapped in the ropes, and then all of a sudden we hear and the Ultimate Warrior runs down to the ring, makes the save, and then we get Hogan and Warrior posing together. The thing with this that I hated was that this completely screamed at me Hogan Warrior match, and Hogan was leaving after this. Wouldn't be back for another year, which maybe they had plans to do them a year later at WrestleMania, but it was just amazing that here they were cleaning up stuff with the steroids, and your answer is, let's bring back the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys, after this show, Sid left after this event. I think some of these guys, they had a few like European dates after this, but for the most part, they were all finishing up there. Sid was gone, Jake was gone, Piper was gone. I mentioned Hogan was leaving. It was definitely a cleanup period for the company at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go, everyone. That was WrestleMania 8. I'm going to give this one a 6 out of 10. a lot of that for nostalgia, and Vince's opening was a solid one star.
I really, really enjoyed the Bret Piper match and the Flair Savage match. I thought they were both very good, so I give it a 7 out of 10. The first half of the show was nothing to complain about whatsoever, but the second half, you have two non-finishes in your two title fights, and then...
I really hate it. Like,
the Owen Hart one-minute match, which was really nothing. Just a very disappointing end to it. I don't know why they couldn't have ended with the Flair Savage match instead.
Like, how can you justify Sid not just doing a clean job for Hogan in the main event?
I have no idea.
Could you not have done the leg drop and then Sid attacks him after with the help of Papa Shango and then do the Warrior spot? I understand that you want to close the show with Hogan and Warrior in the ring together.
You could still do that, but give the fans a clean finish.
Exactly. Sid was leaving. This was Sid's, like, he was finishing up with the company at the time.
They're both leaving.
So what was the point of protecting Sid? With a DQ finish. Like, that just... that was a sour note.
But the crowd was hot for everything here, though. Papered or not, they cheered for everything.
I agree. So, that was WrestleMania 8, everybody. We had some feedback, didn't we? I will bring that up right now, and we'll go through that from two select emails here. We have, coming in from Review Away Biggest Fan... I was looking forward to a non-Mania review, but this should be fun for nostalgia purposes. The WWE roster was stacked back in 92 around Mania 8 with star power. They had Bret Piper, Flair, Savage, Hogan, DiBiase, Jake Roberts, Sid, a returning Warrior, and some big stars on the way up like Owen, HBK, and The Undertaker. Keep up the good work per usual, guys. Hope you guys get some rest this week as you both sounded exhausted on the last podcast. We did sound exhausted, I thought. We should talk about that. We recorded that on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Your shift began on Sunday. Like, you started work at around 11 a.m. What time did you finish last Sunday?
On Sunday, it was the day of the premiere. Well, Sunday I'd stayed overnight, and I didn't leave until Monday at about 3 o'clock once everything was up and ready.
So you worked pretty much 28 hours straight.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever even stayed up for that long, but I did. This past Monday, and you know what? I didn't even feel tired. I think I was just so excited about finishing the project and, you know, getting it out there.
Yeah, big credit to you.
Hey, dude, you, George, Steve, like, we all put a lot of time and effort into this, and I'm so glad it's gotten the response that it has.
Mm-hmm. I felt very bad I had to leave on the Sunday because of the law, but then we were in early Monday, and... you know, it was very, very good response, so we were very happy with it, but it was Sunday was an exhausting one for everybody.
I was so nervous watching it on Monday, just hope, because we didn't really have that much time to review everything, so I was just watching it on Monday, hoping nothing would go wrong. Thankfully, it went perfect.
You know, in a perfect world, we would have, you know, given ourselves some breathing room at the end, but I thought it was really essential we get it on the air the week leading into WrestleMania.
Absolutely.
So I was glad how things turned out. This comes from Reed Dudar. WrestleMania 8, the memories. So I watched this at the McDonald's. I was a swing manager of at the time. A friend recorded it and we all watched it in the staff room. I remember some great matches. Bret versus Piper, Savage versus Flair, and Taker versus Jake. Overall, some good moments. The star power not on this card was funny. Legion of Doom get an interview and bring in their old manager, the former WWF tag champs and the most popular tag team in wrestling get an interview? Fucking retarded. Lex Luger promoting the WBF? Really? And the return of a little smaller Ultimate Warrior? I marked out huge for that. Big Macs were flying everywhere in celebration. Good times. Sid versus Hogan was a huge clusterfuck off a bad ending. Sid kicked out of the leg drop. He kicked out, damn it. Hogan wins by DQ in his last match? Fuck, even as a kid that pissed me off. Should have been Hogan versus Flair. WWF dropped the ball on that. Lots of bad matches, but great crowd and the last big stadium crowd for WrestleMania until 17, I think. Can't wait for your review. Great job, guys. Thanks very much, Reed. And that would have been quite the event at the McDonald's watching WrestleMania 8 in the staff room. Yeah. So those are our feedback. We always encourage you guys to go to our Facebook group. Go to reviewaway.com, reviewaway.com. We're at 703 members right now, so thanks to everyone for joining. We hit 700 for WrestleMania, so that was our target. Kept going up and up because we got all these unexpected additions.
Our target originally was 600, and now we ended up with 100 more, so that's incredible.
Yeah, so thanks everyone. Keep spreading the word. And we also did a quick contest this week on Facebook where a wrestling writer named Jason Powell had posted this high school photo of The Undertaker, and I just thought we'd throw it up, and the best caption would get a prize. So congratulations to Charles Spencer. We picked you as the winner of the caption contest, so you will be getting a DVD in the
mail.
What
was his caption?
Go look it up.
Okay.
Come on, we got to send people back to the Facebook group. Now they can go look.
If you want to know what he said, if you agree or disagree, check it out. Revealway.com.
All right, as we wrap up your way, I told people that we would go with an ECW pay-per-view for next week, so I picked one that I actually have never seen before. I was going to go with the last ever ECW pay-per-view, but I thought, let's go one back, because I want to see one that I have not seen before. So we're going to go with November to Remember, from November of 2000. So at this point, things were not looking great for the company, but they weren't... the death knell had not at least sounded yet. As
cool.
the January one, it was looking pretty bleak. So we'll do
very nice.
November to Remember from November of 2000. We have that one, so we will be reviewing that next week. We encourage all of your suggestions. And then weigh our song to go out this week.
Well, earlier this week, we received an email saying that, "What's up, guys? This is an Undertaker rap song I wrote, rapped, produced, and mixed. It's obviously the Undertaker's theme song, but I mixed it with the beat I produced on Fruity Loops. Forgive the mic and audio, since I had to record it on my iPhone and send it to my computer. I was hoping you guys would, if you guys like it, maybe you can play it at the end of your show next week." Well, I don't know if I like it, I'll be honest. I don't know if I like it, but I appreciate the effort very much, and of course, yes, we will play it. Here it is. Armani Slung Young's Undertaker rap song.
From the bottom of the dust, the depths of the dirt, the innards of the mind and the graves of the hurt, the pains of the lost, the tears of the dread, the souls of the living and the souls of the dead. In life, some things never die. As I walk through the shadows and the hallows of fear, the eyes of the demons and evil so near, the cold strikes the air so callous and sheer, the innocence lost, the malice runs clear, death is embarking, demons is talking, evils come stalking, and the taker keeps walking on the path of eternity. Who will his next opponent be? From Jimmy Snuka to Mark Henry, Flair, Triple H, and a young Randy. They came and went, none spared, none standing, all their souls at the end for the taking. None awaking, all remain shaking. The Undertaker, the phenom so amazing. Can't no one defeat the best, or else they risk being laid to rest. Rest in peace.
I took your soul, I took your health, but the right to be the world heavyweight champion makes a man do irrational things. You step into the demon's playground, where I'll be waiting, where I will show no remorse, no mercy. And when it's all said and done, you will rest in peace.
It all began when the millionaire introduced him at the series and the fans got scared. A lurking dark man defeating his rivals. Within a year he beat Immortals, won titles. His manager Paul Bearer held an urn. The powers he possessed we would all soon learn. He won matches, some with caskets, arenas with 60,000 fans off their asses. Going crazy from Yoko to Mankind, McFoley, crucifixions and the ministry. He battled them all, and when he would fall, he would return as the badass, motorcycle and all. In the meantime, the WrestleMania X8, he said a no and his streak straight elevates. At 11-0, he puts away the Big Show. No time to slow his roll, he makes the pain grow. WrestleMania 23 against Batista, he comes out the champ even more evil. In Orlando, he takes on Edge, and Edge's WrestleMania streak comes to an end. It was WrestleMania 25 when it was close. HBK missed the WrestleMania almost. Beat the Taker, but the dead man arose. WrestleMania 26, rematch 18-0. We'll be right back. We now know the phenom, the supernatural, the incredible, the only individuals who remain relevant in the wrestling world. The future Hall of Famer, the greatest entrance of WrestleMania, the Grim Reaper, Dead Man Walking, Big Evil, the Brothers of Destruction, the whole production, the eyes, the tats, the lights, the hat, the man, the myth, the height, the fist, the white, the black, the knight, the attack, the Undertaker, from our childhood to 2010, another 10 years, I hope so, man, another 10 years, I hope so, man.
You will.